He sure knows how to liven up an American potluck. Matthew Gavin Frank serves up juicy tales to accompany signature foods from all 50 states. He brings us a sampler of comfort foods from the Midwest in a minute on today's Travel with Rick Steves. An ambassador recommends the sites in Switzerland where you don't have to be neutral to enjoy one of Europe's most efficient, tidy, and scenic countries. And dive travel experts share their favorite places to explore the world's seascapes. If you imagine the typical dish from your home state, what comes to mind? And what does that food illustrate about your state's history and culture? Matthew Gavin Frank focuses on one famous food from each of the 50 states and draws those historic and cultural connections for us in his book, The Mad Feast, An Ecstatic Tour Through America's Food. Today, Matthew joins us as we focus on a road trip through Midwestern states and tastes. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
Howdy, Rick. Thank you for having me.
Now, you worked for 20 years in the restaurant industry, and you've set out to have this one unique sort of a dish from each state. That's a pretty big statement. Is it realistic that there's a dish from every state that reflects that state's culture? And do states have their own individual cultures?
It's completely unrealistic, actually. But I had to boil it down to one for the sake of the book. So, of course, no state culture is monolithic. All of these states have multifaceted identities. But for the sake of the book, I had to pick one.
That's fun. And can you really distinguish states by culture?
I mean, states have their own culture, but each culture, you know, houses its own various subcultures. So I feel like each state is a tapestry and not necessarily representing a singular culture, but that tapestry could kind of be unique to a particular state, you know, South Carolina versus Minnesota, for instance.
Reading through your book, I get hungry and I'm ready to travel right now. So take us to Minnesota. What's a dish in Minnesota that would be sort of iconic? And then how does that represent that culture?
Yeah, so for Minnesota, I chose a hot dish, which isn't really easily defined. I was speaking to somebody in Minnesota about it, and this one particular chef basically defined it as a catch-all casserole that was birthed in desperation. So you could have various different kinds of hot dish. It is a casserole. It's usually a one-pot dish. The most popular one that you find in kind of holes in the wall in Minnesota involved like a hamburger, mashed potato, string bean, cream of mushroom soup, lechoy fried onion hot dish.
It sounds like if you're getting together, you bring a hot dish, right? I mean, that's what people do when they have fellowship together. And you even talked about how, you know, they would gather together in the warmest place in town, which would be like the basement of the Lutheran church. And I could just see people saying, yeah, I'll bring a hot dish. And then they kind of grab whatever they've got and heat it up and tie it together with some mushroom soup.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The mushroom soup actually became so favored as the binding agent in hot dish and so ubiquitous that it became known in early hot dish circles as Lutheran binder, which is, kind of wonderful. But they used to have these epic potlucks in the basements of Lutheran churches.
Okay, and bring a hot dish. So that's Minnesota, and that's the Lutheran culture there. What about Michigan?
I'm presently living in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. I'm originally from Chicago, but I chose the kind of culinary or gustatory mascot of Michigan's Upper Peninsula, which is the pasty, which is like almost like a calzone. The original pasties were typically eaten by miners. It was a savory dish and a sweet dish enclosed in a singular pastry shell, the original pasties at least. And the miners would eat down through the savory, usually like stewed ground beef and rutabaga. And after they got through that, they would find at the bottom of the shell this lovely kind of apple and cinnamon compote. So two courses in one shell.
I think of this as a dish from Cornwall. And yeah, it seems like a calzone also from Italy. But Cornwall has that mining connection. And in Cornwall, famously, the miners would have dirty hands, and at lunchtime, they would have actual handles on this pasty that they could hold, and then they eat all the good food, and then they actually get to the dessert, and then they just toss away the little handles. Does that just relate to a mining kind of culture, and what are you going to do for lunch in an era before, you know, plastic bags?
It does. In Michigan's Upper Peninsula, like from the 1850s through the 1930s, like native copper was just about leaking from the earth, and so a lot of the immigrant miners here were from Cornwall, but so many more were Finns, Austrian, Croatian, Italian, Canadian, Swedish. And so this kind of hybrid pasty was born here.
Matthew Gavin Frank teaches creative writing at Northern Michigan University and edits their online literary journal, Passages North. His book, The Mad Feast, is called An Ecstatic Tour Through America's Food with wild backstories to accompany a dish from each of the 50 states. Matthew also explores the role of outlaw carrier pigeons in South Africa's illicit diamond trade in Flight of the Diamond Smugglers. His website is matthewgfrank.com. Matthew, take us to Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, I picked the Sheboygan, Wisconsin-style bratwurst. Unlike many bratwursts that you would find in Sheboygan, they tend to uncase the bratwurst. They pull the meat out of the casing itself and flatten it, almost like a burger. And you eat it kind of on a hard roll with butter, ketchup, brown mustard, raw onion, and pickles. It's pretty wonderful.
And does that go back to its German immigrant history, or where does that go back to?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Right. The German immigrant history in Wisconsin is pretty profound, and the Sheboygan bratwurst hasn't strayed too far from it.
Hey, Matthew, take us to Iowa.
So Iowa, I picked the loose meat sandwich, which you really don't find anywhere else except in Iowa. It's the best way to describe a loose meat sandwich maybe would be like a sloppy-less Sloppy Joe. So sort of like a Sloppy Joe without all of the sauce, just kind of like a seasoned ground beef and onion. And it's known as the loose meat because the meat itself is so loose and crumbly and kind of bursts out of the bun when you bite into it.
Is it on a toasted bun or just a soggy bun?
Usually it's kind of like on a soggy, spongy white bread bun, no frills.
Okay. I'm in the mood for some chili. Take me to Ohio.
Well, if you want some good Cincinnati chili, it can be found. The Cincinnati chili is absolutely fantastic, and it's unique in its spices. A lot of cinnamon and clove in a Cincinnati chili, and the accompaniments with Cincinnati chili just kind of defy both expectation and reason, really. You could get a Cincinnati chili straight up. You could get it Cincinnati chili one-way, two-way, three-way, four-way, or five ways. You could get it with onion. You could get it with onion over pasta. All sorts of interesting kind of combinations with the chili. It's pretty great.
And this would go back to the Macedonian community?
That's right. These Macedonian brothers actually started Cincinnati chili with a little street food stand. They started cooking Macedonian and Grecian cuisine, and they found that the folks in Cincinnati weren't going for it so much, so they tried their hand at chili. They were cooking basically down the road from an old burlesque show, so a lot of the women who were performing at the burlesque show would get out in the wee hours and gorge themselves on the Macedonian Brothers Cincinnati chili on the corner.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Matthew Gavin Frank, and his book is called The Mad Feast, An Ecstatic Tour Through America's Food. And, you know, Matthew, I just love the way this book celebrates food, but it also celebrates the cultural roots of each of our states here in the United States. As you were traveling around the country to do this, we're just talking about the Midwest right now, but, you know, I guess when I'm traveling around the United States with my work as a TV producer, I'm always getting people coming out of the woodwork saying, why don't you do a show on Macedonia? Why don't you do a show on Lithuania? Why don't you do a show on Poland? And it represents where their heritage is. And where I live in Seattle, why don't you do another show on Norway? That sort of shows itself in the passion for the cuisine locally. As you traveled around the United States, and you went to all 50 states to do this book, what sort of overall, you know, conclusions did you draw about what is the fabric of our nation as a whole when it comes to all these individual cultures?
It's kind of funny, Rick. I had a similar experience when I was driving around talking to people, interviewing people, people who work at historical societies, chefs, local folks in towns at like county fairs and things like that. I kind of found like a similar response when I was telling them about the dish I was thinking about exploring. They were saying, well, why don't you write an essay instead about this? Why don't you write an essay instead about that? And so, of course, I couldn't do it all. So as far as drawing conclusions go, this kind of travel actually complicated the U.S. for me rather than like boiled it down to like a singular identity. Like this kind of travel and talking to all of these people from various and diverse cultures, it almost made me resist drawing conclusions and just kind of celebrating these kind of multitude of voices as I went through, and multitude of dishes.
I love that, how it complicated rather than simplified your understanding of our country. I was in, I think it was North Dakota or South Dakota. I'm not much, my beat is Europe, you know, but everybody was talking about this German cuisine. And I thought, oh, you've got a German heritage. No, it's Russian heritage, and it's Germans that went to Russia and then went to North Dakota. And I just thought, my head is spinning, but it's so obvious to the people that live there. That's a beautiful thing, isn't it, as you travel around the country, and whether you're enjoying the history or the architecture or the food, you realize that we have a fascinating weave.
Truly, it was a wonderful experience.
So let's just finish off with, I understand you're from Chicago. What's the iconic dish in Illinois, and what does it say about the culture?
Well, it's more the iconic dish of Chicago than Illinois. So sorry, but I had to go with deep dish pizza. The genesis of deep dish pizza in Chicago is kind of chalked up to legend. Nobody knows the real story, but it was said to have been invented in 1943, possibly to commemorate the launching of the city's first subway, possibly to commemorate the Bears winning of the Super Bowl, which was then just known as the league title. And there was a pizzeria, Pizzeria Uno on Ohio Street, that would do thin crust. And on a whim, an unnamed chef, some think it might be Rudy Malnati, who later went on to open Lou Malnati's pizzeria, who was then a mere line cook, just decided to put together on a whim a thick crust pizza. And that's essentially how it was born. And I love thin crust pizza, too. I never understood the pizza wars between New York and Chicago. I just thought, why not love both?
Why not? That's great. Matthew Gavin Frank, thanks so much for writing the book, The Mad Feast, and taking us on an ecstatic tour through America's food. Bon appetit and happy travels.
Thank you, Rick.
Matthew Frank takes on the foods of the South in an earlier edition of Travel with Rick Steves. It's posted with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Diving enthusiasts from Australia recommend their favorite destinations to explore above and beneath the surface in a bit. But first, a former U.S. ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein recommends her favorite places and festivals in both countries.